Yours to Protect, brought to you by Southeast Radio, the IBI, and funded by Commissioner Naman with the television licence fee.
Welcome to this episode of Ours to Protect on Southeast Radio. I'm Ella, I'm 17, and I'm delighted to be taking you through this special series where we explore how local communities are taking action to protect the environment and how each of us can play a part. On today's show, we're focusing on the role of education in shaping a more sustainable future. I'll be talking about the Green Schools Initiative, which is encouraging students across Ireland to take environmental action in their own schools. We'll also be looking into the brand new sustainability subject that's been introduced into the curriculum this year, what it covers, why it matters, and how it's helping to build awareness amongst the next generation. Plus, we'll shine a light on some inspiring local projects, including one of the biggest green spaces in Wexford, Min Ryan Park, and a brilliant initiative offering free trees to primary schools for National Tree Day. Stay with us as we explore how education is not just about learning from books, but about learning how to take care of the world around us. This series is all about hearing children's voices and their perspective. So this episode features young people from Oilgate National School,
Goolmurra Horswood,
Screen National School, Pearcestown National School, Clostrabri Carnew and Goolmurra Coolcots. We're kicking off today's episode with a visit to Clostrabri in Carnew, where we met a group of busy and enthusiastic students. This group is the first in the school to take part in the new sustainability subject introduced this year, and they're already diving headfirst into it. What makes their story even more exciting is that they're also taking part in a special French exchange programme. And both schools, in Ireland and France, are working together on sustainability-themed projects. When we arrived, the students were in the middle of a creative session, designing posters on a range of sustainability topics. Here's what they had to say about what they're working on.
Each group has a SDG. We gave them a little presentation on each SDG, and then we did a poster with them to like compare Ireland and France. They do have fairly good English, mm-hmm. So...
kind of the same place. They're saying answers, just different wording than ours.
So right now we have one Irish student and two French students paired up together, and we're going through a sustainability goal each. And I know I'm doing renewable energy, so I'm comparing renewable energy in Ireland and in our school to in France and in their school.
I'm doing zero hunger, so that would entail a bit of farming. And I think they don't really know much about farming, unlike we would. So their farming would be a bit behind us. Because I asked the girls, and they live around farms, but they wouldn't be as interested in the topic as many people from Ireland would.
We do know posters, and we compare the French organizations, like for the... And we compare with the island.
So we all made posters. And we are like going around and getting the answers off different posters, so like the other SDG goals, and we're trying to find the answers to them. And we were comparing our school and their school, mm-hmm. so like what they do to keep like sustainable in their school and what we do in ours, mm-hmm. and like if we could come together as two schools and kind of figure out a way to stay sustainable for them, because they don't really know much about it.
And we're just like teaching them and have them understand more about the goals. And
yeah, they didn't really hear the goals.
Yeah, they never heard of the SDGs.
Up next, we asked the students about the new subject they're embarking on about sustainability.
There's actually a waiting list for this subject in our school, so it was picked out of a hat. Only 27 of us got it out of, I think it was 50. I suppose it was just like something different.
I don't know, I think it's kind of, some things are not common knowledge, but you kind of would have heard of them a bit, but some of the bits you would have never heard of before. But I think it's interesting because we don't know much about it, so it makes the subject more enjoyable.
Oh, I love it. It's my favourite subject. I think it's so interesting because we're learning about stuff that we have to face now, and like topics that will change our lives and problems that we're trying to solve and face. And it like educates kids more on it because you don't learn about it often.
I really, really like it. I think it's a good, unique opportunity as well, especially when we're going to get jobs, that we have an extra subject that other people don't really have. And like, it really is just, it's real life stuff.
It's all right, sure. Happy I picked it. Yeah.
Thing is though, like I didn't know what it was.
It's hard enough, there's a lot of notes and a lot of stuff you've never really done before. Like,
I think it was like a big change because we had no idea what we're going into. Like there's no marking schemes or anything, so we're just kind of trying to hope, like, and trying to work on what we think is going to come up, but we actually don't, we genuinely don't know.
Yeah, like at the start we were a bit nervous, didn't really know what it is, but now like we've kind of got the hang of it.
Yeah, the STGs and like the MDGs. Yeah, MDGs. We, like, when we started doing them, we got the hang of it.
Yeah.
So now we kind of understand more about the subject. So it's actually not too bad.
And like
bad
it's
now.
Getting easier. Yeah. Trying to do it.
There's like two exam papers. Example.
Yeah, we have like example exam papers.
So we've been just trying to practice them, and they've actually been quite fine.
Been helpful.
The subject does tie in a lot with like biology, ag mm-hmm. science, and P. Was it P?
Just like other sciences.
Yeah, other sciences it ties in.
Staying with the topic of sustainability, we asked the students what sustainability challenges do they think young people in Ireland face most often?
We think climate action, because it's an ongoing problem with the ecosystems mm-hmm. and all, and we're obviously the future, mm-hmm. so we're going to have to be dealing with the consequences of it more and more than mm-hmm. say other people will.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to deal with the like past consequences and the future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that would be the ones we'd face the most.
I thought France is a lot bigger country, so I thought they'd be like a lot ahead of us, but I think we're doing a lot better than them.
And like even when we were comparing our schools, they hadn't really done
they
anything.
Did, yeah, they don't really have like a green schools or anything, whereas yes. we do. They just were like, oh, we have recycling bins, that's
yeah.
all.
And I was talking to our teachers and they liked our idea about the food appeal every Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So they might like bring
try
that
do
back
that
with
themselves.
Them.
Yeah, they
do. We do like the SVB food appeal. Okay. So like every base class in the school gets a box, and they advise everyone to bring in some. Then like whatever we bring in, we donate to poor countries.
If you could change one thing in your daily life to be more sustainable, what would it be, and what's stopping you?
I try stop using just plastic bottles and get a reusable one, because if I see something in a shop I'll just buy a Lucozade instead of just having a bottle, because in Carnew we have water stations to fill up the bottle.
Okay,
and Miss Gann, the principal, is trying to get everyone to get reusable bottles. She's done an announcement on the intercom to try to get everybody to get reusable ones, so we're not all using different bottles every day.
I think we could walk a bit more, like mm-hmm. obviously we are a country school so we're quite far away. But I think walking would improve, obviously, the carbon emissions mm-hmm. and our fitness as well. And even, like, get on a bus. I think if we could get more buses going through, like, small countries mm-hmm. and all that, like, small counties
mm-hmm.
and, like, some villages and all, like, for me, there's no bus mm-hmm. around, so we have to all drive everywhere. If we had a bus, it would really save so much carbon emissions.
I'd have to agree with Ron, yeah. I think we have a really bad habit of, since we're so used to being in cars the whole time, even if we're in like a big town or a city, instead of walking from shop to shop, if they're like a little bit away, we'll just get in the car and drive.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just not really used to having the public transport. I think that would really help.
Probably recycle more and mm-hmm. be careful in the bins more, like they're just throwing it in a random bin.
I'd like to be able to walk to school. Yeah, but
I live quite close to school, yeah, so I can walk to school.
Do you think people your age have the power to influence your community and maybe even your family at home?
Yeah, I think like we'd be more educated on it than they would have been, because back mm-hmm. when they were in school, it wouldn't have been a topic at all. It was probably never mentioned once in all the years they were in school. And I think like even like my grandparents, the bottle thing was probably in for ages before they even realised. They probably noticed on a receipt mm-hmm. that they were being charged extra, and they probably didn't even realise what it was, because they wouldn't hear about it much mm. unless they heard it on the news or something.
Yeah, I think we would have more,
yeah.
because we're obviously now we're lucky enough to be learning all about it. So like I could go home and I tell my parents about it and they wouldn't have a clue what I'm on about.
Mm.
But like it is up to young people to come up with more ideas and all. Like the bottle banks, that's a brilliant idea. And like it's young people who need to come up with more ideas, so for our futures and all.
Yeah,
I feel like we are.
I feel like just like a random little thing in the house that you might notice, like that you learned.
And like
water.
Even to switch water. And like we had an announcement the other day from our principal, and she was like, people need to be bringing in like recyclable and reusable
yeah.
bottles, because they're like it's so bad for the environment to have plastic ones.
But even in the school, like we have plastic ball schemes and we collect balls and we donate the money, but like
still,
it's still better to be.
If you have a reusable bottle, and it's probably saving money as well.
What role does technology play in helping us become more sustainable?
Well, I think vintage is like coming into fashion now, so
And it's also not like extremely expensive, so it's probably more affordable for most people than say like the newer brands.
Yeah, I think a good few people that like don't have jobs and they want to get new clothes would just sell clothes that they haven't worn in a while, so then they can still get newer stuff and they can afford it too because it's a lot more affordable.
Oh, I love vintage.
Dev's costs so much.
Yeah. Oh my god. Or also, have you heard of dress rentals? I work in a boutique, so I hear a lot, and it's getting more popular now. Women will come in, they'll buy a dress from us, mm-hmm. they'll bring it to their shop and they rent it out. So they'll rent you a Deb's dress and you bring it back, and then it goes through however many people.
And if you were to create a sustainability campaign together, what would your main message be?
I think something to do with like driving. I feel like it's a real problem in the country where like, say, it's great in Dublin. It's ideal for Dublin. You can walk wherever you want. There's so many buses and everyone focuses on there. But I feel like the rest of us are kind of getting left out a bit, because if we could all start carpooling, getting more bus routes going, like you're reducing your carbon footprint by so much. Mm-hmm. And then that's obviously something that helps global warming so much more. As nice as the sun is in the winter and in the summer and all that, it's not healthy.
We're after getting a new greenhouse. So maybe if we did a shared garden type of thing with them and compared how different things even grow with the environment that they're in over in France or in Ireland.
And different things that we'd use to grow and ways. Yes.
Definitely life below water. The world is really far behind on that, like, SDG. Littering in the beaches and the water and all, like, it's very bad, very behind, like.
Speaking of sustainability campaigns this month, we marked National Tree Day. Schools across Wexford planted a free Scots pine and explored the role of trees in our environment and Irish tradition. We spoke with Aina Nilovna, environmentalist, broadcaster and expert on nature and folklore. We began by asking Aina why National Tree Day is so important.
It's a special day to teach school children all about trees and the importance and the value of trees. So this year we're sponsored by Glennon Sawmills, and the emphasis this year is on trees as a source of timber, because if you cut down your trees for timber, you use them as part of a timber-framed house, well then the carbon that the tree took out of the atmosphere when it's growing is retained in the building, and these are carbon sinks. So this is a good thing for the environment. This is a good thing to combat climate change. So this is the angle we're going on this year, because each year we have an angle on some aspect of trees. So the tree we've picked then to illustrate this is Ireland's native conifer, which is actually called the Scots pine, but it is actually a native Irish plant. It's been here since the end of the last ice age, and each school then is getting one of those.
Next, we asked Aina to tell us more about the Scots pine.
So it was in the 1700s when they decided we should plant Scots pine back again. And where were they going to get these pine saplings? Only from Scotland, where they hadn't died out. So they got some from there. These are the trees coming from Scotland, so they called them Scots pine because they were speaking English at that stage. But the Irish name for the Scots pine, which is a very old name, is An Gush. That we have actually got an Oum alphabet carved on rocks, which originated as a tree alphabet. And the first vowel of that A is the ancient name for a pine tree, Alum, A-I-L-M. It's very much part of our own native tree collection. It's good for insects because there's 191 insects associated just with pine trees. It's good for red squirrels because they feed on the seeds in the cones. It's good for the bees. They collect the resin to fix up their hive to make propolis out of it. So it's a very good tree to have, and it's because we're concentrating on conifers and things like that, that's why we're giving out the native one. But you see, conifers have their leaves all the year round, so they will grow all the year round. So if you have a 33-year-old spruce tree that you're using for timber, it's going to contain as much carbon as an oak tree that took 80 or 90 years to grow, because the oak tree or the ash tree are only getting their leaves half the year. They're not there the other half, so they only grow half the time. Whereas your evergreen trees will grow the whole year round, because we don't really have very cold winters for a tree, that is.
Speaking of trees, we also asked Aina about ash dieback, what it is and what's the knock-on effect it's having.
I mean, that's a fungus that came in and has been attacking all our ash trees, and we can see them all dying back along the hedges, along the good soils, along the ditches, and that's an awful tragedy. The only hope is that some of them are actually immune to it, they don't all die, and the Department of Forestry are busy studying this, collecting trees, cultivating trees that have a resistance to this. So if you have ash trees sprouting up, these have been able to grow through the leaf litter and grow in spite of these fungi that might be about, so there's resistance in those. So really, if you see ash trees growing anywhere as saplings, they will have a resistance in them because they're able to come back. So this is the kind of work the Department of Forestry are doing at the moment. So we have to be hopeful that this will work, you know.
Aina is known for her stories about folklore. So to finish off, we asked her to tell us a folklore story about trees.
Oh, I mean, where do we stop? I mean, there's a huge amount of place names from trees. So, you know, Holly is Quillen and Yew is Ewer. And, you know, there's counties in Ireland called after the yew tree, for example. Mayo is Weeyo, the plain of the yew trees. Yew trees were very common and now they're not around at all. So you'd wonder, why did they grow them so much long ago? And why did they stop? And of course, the thing is that the yew was a method of mass destruction. They made bows from yew, and the archers in the time of the Normans, everybody had to have their forests of yew in order to have enough weapons. So the men of Mayo must have been mighty archers, because the whole county is called after the plain of the yew. So how is about that for you?
This year, Ars to Protect launched a groundbreaking project in collaboration with the Institute of Climate, Sound and Society at Harvard University. The initiative aimed to map local biodiversity through sound, using audio moth recorders, which are compact weather-resistant devices capable of capturing the sounds of wildlife around the clock. This was the first project of its kind globally, using sound to document nature specifically for journalistic storytelling. Southeast Radio, alongside 15 other independent radio stations, spearheaded a nationwide campaign to select the ideal location for the audio moth installation during the summer months. Following a thorough search, Oilgate National School was proudly chosen as the site for this initiative project. Have a listen to the children choosing somewhere to place their audio moth and what they think they'll hear.
Birds. Wind. Wind chimes.
Owls. Yeah. Bats, I wonder.
Interesting migration.
Migration. And anybody got any ideas where we're going to put this device?
Definitely not there.
Okay, come on, let's go have a look and see. Where will we put it?
You had a few ideas. Tell Brownie where your ideas were.
Over there.
Show me.
Go on, you lead the way.
Good job. Hang it like off that ceiling. That little vase hanging off that one. It's like all around there. Okay. Half the time it's just going to be hearing the drums go. See the drums go.
Hang it.
Jump up on that. Yeah. You're
taller. I might go up here.
Okay, and will you guys keep an eye on it for me for the next couple of weeks?
Yeah.
After a summer spent in school, we analysed what we could hear, and here are some of the results. The recorder was set to record at dawn, and what came about was a chorus of birdsong on a beautiful summer morning. Now, can you notice the difference on a day when it's raining a few weeks later? That's right, there is no bird chorus on that day. So it seems like the birds around Oilgate don't like the rain. Now let's fast forward to later in September, on another rainy day. Let's take a listen. You can clearly hear rain. It must have been a big downpour that morning, and birds in the far distance on that day. How interesting. Now, let's take a look at nighttime. This is around 9 p.m. when the sun is beginning to set. Let's take a listen to what we hear. It's a lot quieter at night in the sky, but down on the ground and in the trees, you can hear insects all around. One last piece of sound before you go. It seems like at evening, a bird or some other creature became slightly curious of what our recorder was up to. Let's have a listen. The children loved taking part in this unique project and were fascinated to hear the differences between day and night. We're now making our way to Minn Ryan Park for a walk with former Mayor and Wexford TD George Lawler, who played a key role in bringing the park to life, from its earliest planning stages to its completion. We began by asking George about the biodiversity in the park.
Well, I suppose the whole area of biodiversity is the manner in which everything about us is interconnected, and I suppose we're dependent on everything else in terms of genes, species, ecosystems. So places like Minn Ryan Park, which is a very modern park constructed by the local authority, I suppose is a place that can be a haven, both a haven for biodiversity and also a beacon as to what we can do in our own little way to really turn things around. We're now being told that certain parts of Europe will be unlivable in a few years' time, and that includes parts of, you know, places like Spain and Italy, places where we're used to travelling off and visiting. The notion that we can't dig deep and do try to do something about this is really not a runner. Where we're sitting today, I suppose, is an example of how, with little effort, we can make a huge difference locally.
The next topic of conversation looks at the lawns in the park and leaving nature to thrive.
Yeah, we have what we call a reduced cutting regime here in the park, and it means that we reduce the level of cutting of grass. So you'll see a lot of thick sward and wildflowers, and they're naturally occurring. You'll also see around the park lots of willow. This is a lovely native flowering plant, and that's a huge benefit because it flowers early, and it's a huge benefit for the early bees and bugs in terms of pollinators. And parts of this park are quite wet. And this is left like that to encourage the natural wetland plants. And you know, sometimes there will be a call, we need to drain this area, we need to improve the drainage in the area. Parts of this park are left quite wet. You know, they're not necessarily overly accessible, but they're left wet so that the wetland plants can develop and thrive. You know, it's a big deal in a small area. They're hugely beneficial to the entire ecosystem in this area. Another thing that we do is we encourage the native seeds that are already in the ground to thrive and develop.
We finish off the walk by talking about the importance of sustainability and biodiversity in Wexford.
We have something that we really must work very carefully with. We have a county that is hugely dependent on agriculture, and we have a continent that is hugely dependent on biodiversity. We need to ensure that we maintain and retain the wonderful farming culture that we have here in Wexford. But we can't just say to the 4,500 or the 4,000 family farms in County Wexford, turn the light off, we're stopping. We must work to what the buzzword is, the just transition, but we must work to ensure that we maintain the wonderful traditional farming culture that we have in this county and food production that we have in this county, whilst at the same time maintaining our wonderful biodiverse infrastructure.
We're heading back to the classroom now as we hear about the green schools. We began by asking the students to tell us what is the green flag and why is it so important to your school.
The green flag program helps boys and girls in school to learn about the environment. If you learn different topics to take care of the environment, you'll do a great job to get a green flag. Our green flags hang on our school hall. We're very proud. Living in a safe, healthy world is important to live for the next generation.
Brilliant, brilliant. And what theme are you working on for your green flag?
Food and biodiversity. This is our last flag. We have 2 years to work on it. Biodiversity. This is our first. We're learning how to grow and eating our own food impacts biodiversity, which is all about learning about animals in the world.
Green Skills is an environmental education run by UNTESCA in partnership with local authorities. It promotes long-term whole school action for the environment and is Ireland's leading environmental management and award programme, working with both primary and secondary schools. You look at different topics and earn green flags for each one.
We had to write letters to Miss Ryan explaining why we would like to be on the committee and list some of our ideas.
The green flag proves that we were one step closer to being a green school, and it shows that we've worked hard and we deserve that we got it, and it was a lot of hard work to get there.
We have a green school committee here because I think it's important that every school has one, because you can do one small change and that could make a big impact in the future.
Green school is about the earth and like helping the environment, about like trees and everything. Landfills are being created and trees are going to die down. So green school is trying to prevent that. And I think we have tried our best, but we are going to try harder to help the environment.
I think what the green school is like, where we talk about how we're gonna help the earth, about like, you know, the trees and all, and we think about composting the fruit and all, and then like the green flag is basically like showing all of our hard work we've done.
The green flag means a lot to us, that we are one step closer a greener school.
The flags are awarded to schools who consistently demonstrate sustainability and an awareness for the environment in both their locality and across the world.
It is important to our school because we believe that we are very sustainable and we do our best to highlight environmental issues. So it is nice to get the award and the flag for our hard work.
What team are you working on for your green flag right now?
This year we are working on and have just been awarded flag number 8 Global Citizenship Marine Environment. It is a great achievement for us.
Global Citizenship and Energy is, we have to learn to get along with each other and save our energy. And when I say get along, I mean like if someone that didn't have, say if you saw like a homeless person on the street and you had just got like something for yourself, but you were like, oh, look at them, I'll give this to them because they don't have much things because they're homeless, then that would be a nice thing for them, and that would be the global citizenship because we're being kind. And then the energy would be taking out plugs once your phone is charged or once your tablet or your computer, and turning off lights when you leave the room.
There's 17 global goals, and there's like 193 countries or 98 agreed to it. It's like 17 things over like a 5-year period to try and make the world a better place.
One thing that we are currently doing, one of the themes would obviously be composting, and that has been our theme for last year and this year. But also we started doing, our theme this year would be global citizenship. And each year in our school, like from, I think it could be first to sixth class, we have like a different project to do. Like say at my years would be, we talk about food waste and we're learning about it.
We do global citizenships goals, and we have actually squares about them. And there's a whole wall dedicated to global citizenship.
How did your school help you earn your last green flag?
Different ways my class and some of the other classes in the school helped to earn our last green flag was to cycle to school, where we would all cycle to school in a group with some of the teachers, and the big classroom challenge, where the teachers would walk to school together. The traffic survey, where we would figure out how much people go on the bus, how much people walk to school, how much people carpool, and how much people go in their own car. And the idling campaign, where we would promote to not idle.
Part of the Green Schools Committee, we completed projects and carried out surveys within the whole school. We also gave presentations and lessons to the other classes on various topics.
My class, her class, also participated by doing our own research and our projects on environmental topics.
We have a notice board in the hall to tell everyone in school what we are doing and what we are working on. We also have a school website and blog. We keep updated with news and photos, as well as pieces in our monthly newsletter.
We remind the students of what bins to use for different types of waste.
We have taps in the bathroom that turn off by themselves.
We have signs encouraging students to switch off lights when not in use.
The teachers use online and digital resources when possible instead of printing and wasting paper.
We also have regular litter pickups around the school and received litter pickers and bags from our local council.
We made projects about the global goals and we did a lot of work on the global goals.
On the global goals, we get like a picture with a little turtle and it has a like a speech bubble, but you have to write in what the turtle is saying about for us to help the sea animals and the turtle, and then you colour it in once you've done anything, and you put like, and what I did is I put like rubbish into the look of my sea to show that this is what happens when you throw stuff away, like, or when you lose something on the beach, the tide will come up, get it, and then it hurts the animals, so you have to be careful when bringing stuff.
We do this worksheet once a year, and it has this one turtle on it, and it's like, try and save the ocean, so he has to draw the water nice and clear, he has to draw the turtle nice and clear, like, the ocean, like.
So for Halloween, we used all the wasted apples that we had in school from our lunches, and we bring them home, and for the Halloween costume sale, we got the parents to bring in the costumes, and with wasted apples, we said we'd make chocolate apples out of them and sell them, and they were a big success, and we sold lots of costumes, lots of apples, and it raised a lot of money for our all-weather pitch outside.
Usually, the Green School Committee, we speak in the Monday assemblies weekly, and we have like stuff like, for our global citizenship, we had a multicultural week, and as Willow said, we had a costume sale, which was a huge success, and we made the apples, and other committees have also been doing that, like the Amber Flag Committee, they sold chocolate apples for Valentine's Day.
As Willow said and Jessica about the Halloween sale, we raised over €400 for the all-weather surface, and it was a big success, and no costumes were wasted in the...
And last but not least, what advice would you give to another school just starting their green flag journey?
Sale.
To start small and think big, to start with some of the smaller, easier stuff and then get to the more difficult things. Get everyone on board, so get students, teachers, even parents on board. To make it fun and visible, so maybe put some competitions, art, celebrate your achievements. Connect with other schools, see if other schools have any like ideas they want to share with you. And stay patient and committed, because it does take a long time to get everything, but you'll eventually get it.
I will tell them that it is good fun and the projects are enjoyable and educational. It gives you a great understanding of our environment and how everyone can help to save it. It's a great program and I would encourage every school to give it a go.
I'd say try your best on keeping your school greener. Don't be like tempted to do anything. Try your best in everything at all.
This is a kind of an important piece of advice. Keep your school green, because if you don't, it could have a large impact on the earth. But if you do, it could have a much larger impact on the earth in a good way. Include everyone in your school of the green school to help out for your green school.
I've been on the Green School Committee for 2 years. And one really big piece of advice that I could say is tell your teachers who are organising it the ideas that you have, because even though they might be big, you should still say it, because our school we used to do composting a while ago, but there was too much food waste, so we have to stop. But last year I suggested that maybe we could start again, but limited to only fruits and such, and we got the compost bins after I said that, And then after that, the composting in our school has been a huge success.
I love helping the community, and I love helping the school. And overall, it's just makes you feel important.
I just say try your best and good luck. And if you do really well, you could end up like us with our green flag. We're on the radio, we're happy, we're a green school. So you could end up like us.
That's all for this episode of Ours to Protect on Southeast Radio. I'm Ella, and I would like to thank you all so much for joining me as we explored how education is shaping a greener future right here in our community. From green schools to new sustainability subjects and inspiring local initiatives, it's clear that change starts with awareness and action. If you missed any part of today's show, don't worry. You can catch the full episode online or join the conversation on our social media channels. We'd love to hear how you're making a difference in your community. Thanks for joining us on Southeast Radio, and don't forget, the future is bright and it's ours to protect.
Ours to Protect on Southeast Radio.
Ours to Protect, brought to you by Southeast Radio, the IBI, and funded by Commissioner Man with the television licence fee.